It's begun.
Thank you so much. This is March 11, 2024, and we are here for the Thurston County Land Use Hearing Calendar. My name is Sharon Rice. I'm an attorney who works as a hearing examiner on contract with Thurston County and about 12 other cities and counties, largely up and down the I-5 corridor. As the county's hearing examiner, I have jurisdiction to hear and to issue the county's final decision in the project being considered today. This is project number 2020-104385. It is being referred to as the Inspiring Kids Preserve, and the permits under consideration today are requests for reasonable use exception, special use permit, and forest land conversion. I have some introductory remarks that will let everyone know how best and when to participate in these proceedings, so please follow along. First, I'll let you all know if anyone needs to get my attention today, you should call me Examiner Rice or Ms. Rice. If anybody participating has requests about how they should be addressed, please let us know when you first testify. Today's virtual hearing is being conducted on Zoom. Zoom is making a recording, both video and audio, of the testimony given here today. It is actually the audio recording that is a crucial part of the legal record of this legal proceeding. And because it needs to capture all testimony audibly, it is my standard practice to ask everyone in the meeting, please keep your audio muted when you're not testifying. That way, in case ambulance goes by or whatever happens, it's outside your control, it won't interrupt somebody else who's speaking. It also helps if you'll check the cell phone or other device that's nearby that can make noise and make sure it's quiet as much as you can so that your testimony is not interrupted when you are testifying. We would all appreciate both of those things. Of course, please remember this is a virtual hearing, but it is a legal proceeding, and it's the examiner's job to run it in an efficient and civil manner. I will be charged with keeping order, and I need to remind folks that just like in an in-person hearing, if we have any disruption, the disrupting parties will be addressed as follows. First, if it seems to be an audio interruption, I will ask Ms. Katie to help me identify the party making the noise and get them muted. If there is any apparently intentional disruption, I will ask for her assistance in removing people from the meeting. So please just keep in mind that that's how order will be kept. As we go forward, in order to make sure testimony is captured for the recording, I will ask folks as best as possible not to speak over each other. I'm going to acknowledge people to testify one at a time. The first time you do testify, I will ask that you state and spell your name for the record. If you're an applicant, representative, or a county staff member, I will then ask you to please give me the correct job title by which you should be addressed in the findings. And then I will ask you please to take an oath to tell the truth. Members of the public, similar but slightly different, state and spell your name, and then please give us either a mailing address or a U.S. mail address so that we can have the correct contact information for you. So when we get to public comment, I will remind folks of that. Please just remember everyone needs to be under oath before they testify, and if anyone forgets, pardon me in advance, please, for interrupting you to make sure that all of those steps are accomplished. The State of Washington Appearance of Fairness Doctrine applies to all land use hearings, including this one. That law requires the decision maker to be free from bias or prejudice, and because it applies, I will make the following disclosures. Again, I'm not a Thurston County employee. I work on contract for this and other local governments. I don't own any property anywhere near the subject property, and I have not had conversations with anybody regarding the merits of this proposal. And because all of those facts are true, I believe I'm capable of issuing an impartial decision in this project. Anyone who thinks they have grounds to challenge my impartiality is required by the state law to raise that challenge at their first opportunity. And if you are in this meeting, that would be in your opportunity for testimony today. I also want to let folks know, I make this announcement at every hearing. Usually it's because of the number of people who are interested who are opposed to a project. Today I will make it because of the number of people who are in favor of a project. The number of people who are either for or against a project is not itself evidence. As the county's examiner, I am looking to review the information that has been submitted in the record to determine whether it succeeds in demonstrating compliance with the permit criteria for approval and applicable development standards. any information that tends to show the project either does or does not comply with those applicable regulations will be relevant and will be relied upon. But the number of people for or against a project is not itself something that I can consider. So please direct your testimony towards those criteria for permit approval and applicable development standards. In all land use applications, the applicant is the party that bears the burden of proof. That is a legal term that means the applicant is the party whose job it is to provide evidence that does succeed in demonstrating compliance with permit criteria for approval. However, in Thurston County, as in many jurisdictions in Washington State, we do hear from staff first. That tends to be because staff is more familiar with the code and generally more familiar with the hearing process. So in terms of order of today's testimony, I expect to hear presentations from county staff members. I do have questions queued up for them. After that, I expect to hear presentations from applicant representatives, and their opportunity, applicant, is to add to challenge or to speak to anything the county staff has said, as well as to make sure all relevant evidence that succeeds in showing compliance criteria for approval is brought to my attention. Before we adjourn, I also have applicant questions queued up. At that point, we will go for public comment. And when we get to that part of the meeting, I will have some more specific instructions, but please know in advance, there won't be a question and answer session during this meeting today. When it's time for public comment, I will hear comment from every member of the public who wishes to testify one at a time. And while they are speaking, I will ask staff and applicant representatives to join me in making note of questions and concerns that are raised. And after all of the public has testified, then we will have responses. First from staff and last from applicant, because as the party with the burden of proof, they get the last say in these proceedings. At that time, I will close the record and take the exhibits and testimony under advisement. By county code, I have 10 business days to issue a written decision. Folks might know this matter has been special, sort of air quotes, specially set to be heard on this date because of a previous notice scheduling issue. And I already had a very full calendar this week. And when I agreed to special set this matter today, I did ask the applicants to agree to an extended decision issuance deadline. And so I plan to take, I expect it may take me more than 10 days to issue this decision. At the end of the hearing, well, and let me just say, my understanding was the applicant agreed to my request for additional time. At the end of the hearing, we'll go over that schedule so that you'll know when the decision is due. Please also understand in virtual hearings, it is my practice to hold the record open after the hearing for a brief period, 2 business days, to allow post-hearing public comment from members of the public who attempted to participate but were unable to do so because technology thwarted them. Their power went out, this kind of thing. 2 business days for public comment after the hearing from people who had technology problems. If we did receive any timely post-hearing public comment from folks with technology problems, staff and applicants would be requested to respond in writing, and they will also have 2 business days. So that creates a bit of a graduated decision issuance deadline, and I will go over those dates in detail at the end of the hearing. As we go forward today, I will ask Ms. Katie to please be formally deputized to jump in and interrupt me if at any time I need to pay attention to something that I appear to not notice. Thank you for that. I want to acknowledge the exhibits that I was provided before today's hearing so that I could conduct an efficient proceeding. At Exhibit 1, as always, I have the Community Planning and Economic Development Report to the Examiner. Exhibit 1 has attached to it attachments A through Z and AA through DD. Those are spelled out in detail on the last 2 pages of the staff report. I also received before today's hearing Exhibit 2, which is Department of Ecology soil sampling information. At Exhibit 3, we have additional public comment that was received by the public, received by the county after publication of the staff report. And at Exhibit 3, I have 3A through 3T. So that is that many additional public comment letters that arrived before today's hearing. And I also received Exhibit 4, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers letter acknowledging coverage of this project under Nationwide Permit 42. So I did receive those documents. Exhibits 1 through 4 are admitted. If we identify any other documents during testimony that need to be admitted, I will make the determination of their relevance and admissibility, and we will make arrangements for those to be sent to Ms. Katie, who will forward them to me after the hearing and will include them in the record. That's it. That's all of my instructions. At this point, we're ready to hear from county staff. I believe I'll hear from planning staff first. If I could ask you please to unmute, state and spell your name, give us your correct job title, and allow me to swear you in.
Heather Tchaikovsky, HEATHERTSCHAEKOFSKE. I'm an associate planner and biologist with community planning.
Thank you so much. I will ask you to raise your hand to take the oath. Do you swear or affirm your testimony will be true? If so, please say I do.
I do.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
This is for project 2020-104385, permit for reasonable use exception, special use permit, and forest land conversion for the Inspiring Kids Preserve. The applicant is Capital Land Trust, or CLT. The applicant seeks approval of reasonable use exception, or RUE, special use, or SUP, and forest land conversion, or FLC, permits to construct a nature preserve that is open to the public with ADA accessible trails, resting benches, natural play areas, learning spaces, wildlife viewing areas, driveway and parking lot with 24 standard vehicle spaces and 2 bus spaces, porta potty, outdoor pavilion, and storage space. The nature preserve will be open from 8 a.m. to dusk, 7 days a week. Up to 10 staff will be employed on site. The subject property consists of 8 parcels totaling 108 acres and is mapped with 100-year flood zone, critical aquifer and landslide hazard areas, wetlands, streams, and conservancy shoreline, of which only 2 parcels will be impacted by the proposed development. The parcels are located in the rural residential resource 1 dwelling unit per 5 acres, or RRR 1 in 5 zoning district, along Henderson Inlet in rural Thurston County. Access to the property is to be provided from Johnson Point Road northeast of public roadway. Written notice of the public hearing was sent to all property owners within 500 feet of the site, and notice was published in the Olympian on February 16, 2024, at least 10 days prior to the hearing. Attachment A. Thurston County Community Planning, or CPED, is the issuing authority for the SEPA threshold determination for the proposal. The application was reviewed pursuant to SEPA requirements, and a combined notice of application and mitigated determination of non-significance, or MDNS, was mailed to all property owners within 500 feet of the site on March 25th, 2022. Attachment H. The MDNS was not appealed, and a final MDNS letter was mailed to all property owners within 500 feet of the site on December 7th, 2023. Attachment W. The subject property is located within rural Thurston County, and the comprehensive plan designation is residential. Primary permitted uses in the RRR 1-5 zone include single family and 2 family residential, agriculture, and home occupations. Surrounding land uses consist of neighboring lots within the RRR 1-5 zone, developed with single family residences and undeveloped forest areas. The subject property has variable topography, in general, sloping down to the southwest towards Henderson Inlet. A large portion of the nature preserve is within undisturbed second and third growth forest. The westernmost portion of the subject property is mapped within the conservancy shoreline of Puget Sound and contains additional shoreline, wetland, and stream features which are not within the extent of the current proposal. The current proposal does not include any impacts within the shoreline jurisdiction and thus does not require review under the Shoreline Master Program for Thurston County. The proposed SUP, RUE, and FLC permits are intended to provide safe access to the site for outdoor learning opportunities in line with the mission of CLT. Attachments C, D, F, and J. New driveway access point meets minimum safety standards for site distance allowance on Johnson Point Road, as well as bus entrance and turnaround needs for expected school usage of the nature preserve facilities. The proposed site development actions will directly impact 707 square feet of wetland and 50,856 square feet of wetland buffers. with an additional 18,296 square feet of wetland buffer conversion. Total cut volume for the project is expected to be 3,312 cubic yards, and fill volume is expected to be 463 cubic yards. Attachment C, G, I, L, and M. As mitigation for these impacts, the project will include 81,849 square feet of wetland mitigation and 100,393 square feet of wetland buffer mitigation. Attachment G. Wetlands and streams in proximity to the proposal were delineated by a professional consultant, DCG Watershed. The final critical areas report, dated October 24th, 2023, identified a total of 15 wetlands within the vicinity of the project area. Thurston County Code, or TCC, 24.25 and 24.30 of the Critical Areas Ordinance list standards and limitations for development of property containing streams and wetlands, including buffers. A small portion of the proposed parking hub and the proposed ADA access trail are within the portion of the wetland buffers under administrative critical area review. The project includes an 11,499 square foot, 6 foot wide crushed gravel ADA accessible trail located in wetland buffer. The proposal meets criteria for ADA accessible passive recreation per TCC 24.30.260, attachment B. Mitigation per the DCG Watershed Mitigation Plan shall compensate for all administratively approved wetland buffer impacts at a one-to-one ratio per TCC 24.30.080 per critical area review permit approval dated January 30, 2024, attachment U. The eastern portion of the subject property is nearly completely encumbered by wetlands and wetland buffers, thus the majority of the proposal will directly impact wetlands and the inner 75% of wetland buffers within the development footprint. RUE is the procedure to propose development within wetlands and the inner 75% of wetland buffers, TCC 24.30. Staff finds the project to be consistent with RUE criteria. For the applicant, the owner's mission is to conserve land and provide environmental education opportunities to the public. The north half of the property was purchased using public grants. A condition of the grant imposed by the funding agency was that CLT would forfeit previously existing development rights, thereby restricting development of the site to the conservation and education use declared by CLT in their grant application. CLT cannot develop the property for a use other than the one they are proposing. The proposed site plan represents the minimal impact when compared to all other land uses that could be implemented for this site. There is no other reasonable use appropriate to the owner's mission that would have less impact on the site's critical areas or buffers. Attachment D. Even though there are impacts to the wetland and buffers proposed, the development represents the minimal alteration of the critical areas while providing for safe access and educational infrastructure on site. The submitted mitigation planting plan will result in no net loss of critical area functions and values of the wetland. Attachment G. The applicant will be providing a maintenance and monitoring plan for woody and herbaceous vegetation that will assure success over a 10-year period as required. The hydrological condition will be maintained by stormwater BMPs. The grading requirements for the site are minimal, and the geologic condition should be maintained as well. As such, staff does not believe the activity will result in damage to other properties and should not threaten the health, safety, or welfare on or off the site. The project is designed such that there should be no substantive impacts to species of concern which require mitigation. Staff analysis finds the proposal to be consistent with all known applicable laws and plans for SUP, including standards for lighting, signage, landscaping, and parking. The use will comply with the general purposes and intent of the RRR 1-5 zoning district, specifically setbacks and bulk requirements, as well as the comprehensive plan, in particular Chapter 9, Environment, Recreation, and Open Space. The location is appropriate for the use. The completed project will generate 15 to 25 vehicular trips per day on average, Construction BMPs and standard work hour time periods will limit off-site disturbance during hub and driveway construction. Visitor noise will be limited to daytime hours. Activities on site are largely buffered by surrounding forest, as the proposed parking hub is centrally located away from neighboring residences. No hazardous materials are proposed for storage on site, no proposed public restroom, and the porta potty shall be regularly maintained. No trash or solid waste storage will occur on site, and litter on site will be properly removed and disposed of in approved off-site facilities. Attachments C, D, F, G, I, L, M, and N. No impacts to existing improvements or facilities are expected. Existing power and communication lines are at the right-of-way of Johnson Point Road Northeast. Thurston County Environmental Health has reviewed and approved the proposal and provided conditions of approval. Attachment T, based on water supply, wastewater treatment and disposal, and solid waste management. Development Review has reviewed the proposal and provided conditions of approval. Attachment S. The proposal complies with SUP academic school standards per TCC 20.54.070.1, specific to an outdoor school learning environment. The nature preserve will be visited on a periodic limited school group schedule. The total acreage of the subject property plus ample forest screening satisfies the criteria for minimal off-site disturbance. The current proposal encompasses a use area of approximately 1 acre within two subject parcels totaling 52.85 acres. The proposed SUP and RUE will be in compliance with the standards of the Forest Lands Conversion Ordinance, TCC 17.25. All critical area impacts have been addressed and mitigated. Stormwater and construction plans were reviewed and approved by Public Works, and the project is not within the shoreline jurisdiction. Attachments E, F, G, H, I, J, K, N, U, and W. Applicant proposes to remove 1.7 acres of forest by shovel harvest method, estimating 31,000 board feet of timber harvest total. Attachments J and K. As proposed and conditioned, the application is consistent with Thurston County Comprehensive Plan. The Department of Ecology submitted comment letters, attachment O. Ecology recommendations and conditions are included within this report, as well as the MDNS determination. The Nisqually Indian Tribe submitted a comment letter stating they have no concerns with the proposal and a concurrence letter, attachment Q. Squaxin Island Tribe submitted a comment letter requesting cultural resource survey and a concurrence email, attachment R. The Department of Archaeology and Historic Preservation submitted comment letters requesting cultural resource survey and concurrence letters requesting an inadvertent discovery plan for the project, attachments BB and P. Two public comments were submitted in response to the application and noticing. The applicant submitted responses providing additional details specific to the project, security, and timelines, attachments X, Y, and Z. Numerous public comments were submitted in response to notice of the hearing, all in favor of the proposal. Based on the prior analysis, CPED concludes that the proposed project, when appropriately conditioned, meets Thurston County requirements for RUE, SUP, and FLC upon hearing examiner approval.
Thank you. I just had a couple of questions for staff. Most of my questions are for the applicant representatives. Ms. Tchaikovsky, regarding the forest land conversion, does this proposed forest land conversion trigger any tree tract or tree replacement planting requirements like a residential project would? And can you explain why not?
No, those are typically attached to the urban growth area standards.
Great. Now, I did notice there was the only concern forwarded or comment forwarded by environmental health that could be construed as a concern was regarding a lack of an easement that seems to be recorded for an existing drain field. I know Ms. Peebles is not here today, I don't know if you have any information about that, Ms. Tchaikovsky, that you could share for the record. I can also ask the applicants to speak to it.
Yeah, I think that will come up with the applicant, but we did have some email correspondence this last week, and that project condition will remain for environmental health.
Okay. I will ask the applicants about that. I really don't have any other questions about the county's analysis in the record. I appreciated the documents that were provided. My last request, I guess, my last question is a request. Is it possible for me to get Word versions of the MDNS and the critical area determination so that I can easily cut and paste portions into the decision document and not have to type them?
Would the final MDNS be okay?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I should be able to do that.
If you could forward those to Ms. Katie, I won't make them exhibits. They're just Word versions of the documents that are already in the record. And again, it just makes it easier to cut and paste than to type. So thanks. Let me just speak to Mr. Saint. You're here today. I appreciate that you are. May I ask you a couple questions?
Sure.
Can I swear you in, sir? State and spell your name. Give me your title.
Arthur Saint, ArthurSaint. I'm a civil engineer for the Thurston County Public Works Department.
Appreciate it. Do you swear or affirm your testimony will be true? If so, please say I do.
I do.
Mr. Saint, the only question I have for you was your review of the site entrance location. My understanding is that it was selected to minimize impacts, but could you speak to the road standards or traffic safety concerns that you're aware of that drove its selection?
Just that Johnson Point Road is an arterial roadway and has quite a bit of elevation change. So we wanted to make sure that's a safe location, especially with other access points along the road.
Okay. Anything else about your review of the project you'd like to bring up for the record?
Not at this time, no.
Okay. Then I will also ask the applicants, of course, to speak to site selection for that entrance. And that's all I had. Mr. Saint, thank you. Mr. Tchaikovsky, thank you. I am ready to hear applicant testimony. Whoever will speak for the applicant first?
That will be me.
Please introduce yourself, state and spell your name, give me your title, and then let me swear you in.
Pardon me. Can I share the screen?
Yes, you may share a screen share.
Okay.
I am Dave Winter, DaveWinter, and I'm the executive director at Capital Land Trust.
Great. If I could ask you to take the oath, sir, do you swear or affirm your testimony today will be true? If so, please say I do.
I do.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I'm excited to be here today and appreciate the opportunity to get to this phase in this project. We at Capital Land Trust are a nonprofit land trust that strategically conserves vital natural areas within South Puget Sound and Chehalis Basin watersheds. We believe that natural open spaces and properly functioning ecosystems are essential to the quality of life that we all enjoy in our region. And as a local land trust, we prioritize conserving properties with estuaries, marine shorelines, wetlands, rivers, riparian areas, and associated forests because of the crucial role that they play in supporting the health and the vitality of both wildlife habitats and for people in our community. This high standard of our work to date has earned us national accreditation by the Land Trust Accreditation Commission. And since 1987, we've been working hard through fee acquisition and conservation easements and the support of regional partners and a robust network of volunteers to protect in perpetuity 100 properties comprising more than 6,600 acres and 19 miles of Puget Sound shoreline. In 2015, we shifted from a very strict land conservation focus to providing public access to a handful of our preserves, and we've seen thousands of visitors at those sites to date. With this property, as its name implies, the primary focus of Inspiring Kids Preserve is to give kids, and really the kid in all of us within Thurston County, experiences that help form strong connections with the natural world. One of our primary goals as a local organization is to try to inspire the next generation of conservation leaders who are passionate about nature and all of the benefits that the natural world provides. We realize without that connection to the land, people are less likely to understand it or care about it. So with this property, in addition to using the preserve as an outdoor classroom to bring STEM concepts to life, we also are excited to invite community members who will be welcome to use this property as a place to experience the benefits of spending time in nature. And we've worked closely with a number of partners in our community to help shape a vision for what Inspiring Kids Preserve can become, including local tribes who are eager to support and help realize a shared vision for this property. I'm gonna turn it over here to our project team, and I'm gonna let Bob Droll speak next to talk more specifically about our project proposal.
Great, thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Bob Droll, D-R-O-L-L. I'm a landscape architect for the applicant, Capital Land Trust.
Excellent. May I swear you in, sir? Do you swear or affirm your testimony today will be true? If so, please say I do.
I do.
Thank you, and please go ahead.
Okay. Capital Land Trust requests that project number 2020-104385, Inspiring Kids Preserve Reasonable Use Exception, Special Use, and Forest Land Conversion Permits be approved. This community asset is intended to construct a nature preserve that is open to the public, offering ADA accessible trails, resting benches, natural play areas, learning spaces, wildlife viewing areas, a driveway, and a parking lot with 24 standard vehicle spaces, two bus spaces, a porta potty enclosure, and an outdoor pavilion, and a secure storage space. Inspiring Kids Preserve will be open from 8 o'clock in the morning to dusk 7 days a week. Capital Land Trust mission is to preserve land and provide environmental education opportunities to the public. Inspiring Kids Preserve protects many natural resources, including small freshwater streams, the surrounding riparian hardwood forest, a large tract of salt marsh, second and third growth coniferous forest, freshwater wetlands, and over a mile of Puget Sound shoreline. With limited infrastructure and minimal impact, more than 700 youth from local schools have already had the opportunity to experience outdoor learning on the site. Moreover, North Thurston Public Schools is partnering with Capital Land Trust to bring third graders from all of their 13 elementary schools, which represents about 1,200 students, to the property for outdoor classes. The proposed special use, reasonable use exception, and forest land permits are intended to provide safe access to the site for outdoor recreation opportunities in line with the mission of Capital Land Trust. We hope that the hearing examiner will agree, as staff does, that Capital Land Trust has provided ample evidence in our submitted documentation to justify permit approvals. Capital Land Trust wants to be a good neighbor and has reached out to address neighborhood and community concerns. Evidence of this earnest effort and community interest is part of the record in form of 20 letters of support for Inspiring Kids Preserve. So we have reviewed the staff report and all the conditions, and we're in total agreement of the findings and the recommendations, except for the following. Number four, it says that the applicant shall restore the buffer and do the wetland mitigation and the monitoring prior to building permit. Well, the monitoring's 10 years long. I got a feeling that's probably not really intended, because we can't wait 10 years to actually open this. So a friendly suggestion is, you can see on the screen here, is that to change the wording to after the final building permit. And then we could, of course, do the the habitat restoration and beginning the monitoring program. Item 16, this has to do with the soil sampling. We have already done this and we have submitted this as part of the record, which is shown in Exhibit 2. And in that exhibit, you'll find that the Department of Ecology affirms that no further soil sampling is necessary. And then the last one on utilities is that the sewer, proposed sewer and water system shall be designed according to the standards, so on and so forth. We're not proposing any water or sewer here. We have porta potties enclosed in a structure, to shield it from the public. So that we don't believe that's a necessary item. And other than that, we believe that the staff has done a good job of reviewing this project, and we welcome any questions that Examiner Rice might have.
Great, thank you. Ms. Tchaikovsky, before we go to public comment, help me remember to get staff's response to those requested changes, if you would. My first topic of questioning for the applicant is, I'd like to have some, I've read the reports and seen the materials, but I'd like to have some testimony today on how or why it was not possible to avoid all direct wetland impacts entirely for the proposed improvements of the site.
Okay. Well, we went through a number of different proposals to look at the different places where we can locate the entrance on what we call the hub. So you can see, well, this was the one up to the north. And the problem with this one is that is the site distance, that's near the crest of a hill. So if you're looking to the north, you would not be able to see any car, oncoming cars that are southbound. So that's a dangerous situation. Likewise, with this option here, option two, is that it also crosses through the middle of a wetland. Although it's a very narrow piece of the wetland, the site distance still is a problem. And then down here is, it's on the curve, right? It's on a horizontal curve. So once again, the site distance is a big issue. And that kind of leads us to this one. This site distance is at a flatter part of the road, Johnson Point Road. There's plenty of distance between this driveway and the high point of the road to the north, and there's plenty of distance to look to the south around that curve. So both, and this is the site distance examination document that we submitted that Mr. Sank approved, and it provides an engineering analysis of why this particular driveway is the best. In terms of the wetland impacts, there's a number of wetlands that affect everything. This one has the minimal amount of wetland impact and also buffer impact. And the other good reason is that it's kind of in the middle of the property, so it provides equidistance to all of the natural resources of the property.
Thank you. Let me make a note. Great, thanks very much. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if I could have some testimony about the proposed impact mitigation ratios. They are greater than I typically see, and I just would like to offer the applicant an opportunity to speak to those proposed ratios.
I'm gonna just give one statement here in a second, and then I'm gonna defer to Ryan, who will need to be sworn in as well. But Capital Land Trust is in the business of land restoration. This site has been disturbed over a number of years. And even before this site was proposed and we submitted, Capital Land Trust has done and continues to do wetland mitigation and landscape habitat restoration on this site and many other sites. It's part of their mission. Ryan.
Hello.
Hi, my name is Ryan Kahlo, R-Y-A-N-K-A-H-L-O. I'm senior ecologist with DCG Watershed.
Excellent. If I could swear you in. Do you swear or affirm your testimony will be true? If so, please say I do.
I do.
Thank you, Mr. Kahlo. I was just actually wanting an opportunity for you to explain the enhancement and restoration ratios, mitigation ratios that are proposed.
So there's a number of different kinds of impacts that require different ratios. We have direct wetland impacts, 707 square feet. So we mitigated according to both ecology guidance and the local Thurston County Code guidance, which requires an 8-to-1 wetland impact for enhancement. So that's 5,656 square feet of wetland enhancement for our direct wetland impacts. The buffer impacts, we mitigated all of our direct buffer impacts at a 1-to-1 ratio. So 50,856 square feet of buffer, that is a 1-to-1 ratio. The buffer conversion, which is currently forested buffer that's going to be temporarily impacted and then partially restored to a sort of a pollinator mix, kind of an herbaceous area. The Department of Ecology typically requires conversion of buffer or wetland to be mitigated at 1/2 the standard ratio. And that was what we initially proposed. However, Thurston County comments came back saying that they wanted a full 1-to-1 buffer ratio for the conversion. So we found additional buffer areas to mitigate for that. The remaining types of impacts are the indirect wetland impacts. And those are a little more complicated to sort of quantify. Department of Ecology guidance recommends that indirect wetland impacts, so basically impacts to the outer portion of the wetland, then indirectly affects the inner portion of the wetland to the equivalent of the buffer. So those areas are quantified and then mitigated at 1/2 the standard ratio. So we were only able to find 76,000 square feet, 81,849 square feet of wetland that was suitable for enhancement. And so that left us with a shortfall because we required 76,000 square feet of wetland enhancement to offset the indirect impacts. So once we subtracted out 5,600 square feet for the direct impacts, we had a shortfall of about 1,115 square feet of indirect impacts that could not be mitigated through wetland enhancement. So we were left then with our only option being to mitigate those remaining indirect impacts that were unaccounted for through buffer enhancement. There's no specific guidance on how much buffer should be used in lieu of wetland enhancement for indirect wetland impacts. So we decided to, with the land trust mission being to restore and protect these areas, we decided that the best way forward was just to maximize out all of the available buffer areas that were sufficiently degraded that could qualify for enhancement and really just enhance the entire area. So that's why you have that 28-to-1 number, is because we're using buffer for those remaining areas as opposed to wetland. Sort of a complicated math exercise, but in the end, we decided it was best to over mitigate if possible. It's part of the land trust mission, and ecology agreed with the approach.
Thank you very much. That's exactly the degree of detail I was looking for in testimony. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
My next question for the applicant team is, I was wondering if you could shed any light on the Environmental Health Division's requested condition, which strongly encourages the applicant to formally record an easement for a drain field that encroaches on the property. Anybody on your team can speak to that, please?
Yeah, I can speak to that. Bob Droll here. So there's a a duplex to the south. I don't know if you can see my mouth, my cursor here, but it's right here. And it part of that drain field goes on to the property, I do believe. Oh, I'm sorry, it's right there. And we were going to object to that, but since then, Ms. Peoples has sent me some documentation that helped clarify it for me, at least. And we have withdrawn that, and we'll have to work through that with Ms. Peoples and the duplex owner to get that easement issued.
Okay. Thank you for that. Just generically about the use of the site, assuming approvals are granted, your improvements go in as planned, what will the up to 10 staff persons do on site while they're there?
Dave?
Yep, Dave Winter here. I can speak to that. So this will be our organization, you know, has up to 10 staff and carry on a number of different roles. But one of the things that we do, we have a tagline of connecting people and conserving land. So we rely heavily on volunteers to help support the work on our properties. We have what we call trail stewards, who are volunteers that walk the property and help monitor and provide trail reports on what's happening on the property. So if there's safety concerns or any other issues that are happening, trail work that's needed, they can alert us to those things. So our staff will be there to support the volunteers, to also provide some hands-on education to students and other organized youth serving groups that will be coming to visit the property. The other volunteer group that we are looking to build is volunteer docents that are there to help share the natural history, the cultural history, and the environmental studies that would be taking place on this property.
Great. Just so that I'm clear, just so that it's clear for today's conversation, if 10 staff were to be on site, that it says up to 10 staff. So when there are no organized trips, would there be any staff at all on the site? Is this going to be a manned site generally?
It's not going to be a full-time manned site, and there's not going to be any on-site buildings where people are housed to work on a regular basis or anything like that. It is managed as a passive recreation property. So it's staff on site to help support those activities.
Thank you. I assumed, and I just want to make sure that it's clear for today's conversation what is accurate. Aside from inviting public schools or schools, school children to the site to come as organized trips, what other public use is the applicant anticipating for the property?
Yeah, so Dave Winter again, I can speak to that. So we will be managing this property for passive recreation. So hoping that the general public will be able to come out during daylight hours to walk the property. We intend to have some wildlife viewing opportunities to spend time in nature and explore the wildlife that are on site. We will have an ADA accessible trail. So our intent is to provide accessible access, but it is passive recreation, walking, and spending time in nature.
Great. Two parking lot questions. In the event a particularly large school group decides to come or any other large public gathering occurs, is there overflow parking if more cars arrive?
No, we do not. We have not provided for that. So it's going to be an operational concern, and whatever events that are planned out there has to be have a carrying capacity to it to meet the requirements of the available parking.
Great. Okay, thank you for that. Is there any parking lot lighting proposed?
No.
Thank you for confirming. This next question ties into those and also asks you to state again for the record your responses to the one public comment expressing concerns about the proposal. A neighboring property owner asked a while back, what will the applicant do to discourage vagrants from encamping on the site, to discourage individuals from using the property for drug crimes or other criminal related activities, this sort of thing?
That's a concern everywhere we live on every piece of property in the United States.
Yes,
for this particular property, Mr. Winter just stated that there's going to be trail stewards and docents, and you know, having designed who knows how many parks over the years I've been in practice, the more people there are in parks, usually the less problems you have. And likewise here. So the more times that the docents and staff is here on site, probably the least problems you'll have. As far as homeless goes, I would imagine that if the docents and trail stewards and other staff members, when they visit the site on a regular basis, they'll notice this type of activity and notify the appropriate authorities, or just address the person individually. Dave, you want to add to that?
I think that's great, Bob. I would just add that, you know, I mentioned that we've conserved 100 properties and over 6,600 acres. So this is part of our organizational policy in terms of managing our lands and our stewardship activities of the lands that we're responsible for conserving and protecting. And so this is something that we do on a regular basis. We have requirements on all of our lands to monitor them annually, and we look at boundary line issues. And so this is a standard practice for us as a land trust. And we are a part of, as an accredited land trust, we're a part of the national network of land trusts, and we share kind of best practices on how to handle a lot of these issues. So this is a regular part of our work.
Okay, thank you. Could somebody just for this conversation clarify or confirm the gate situation? How will road access be addressed when the park is not open? And I believe you said it's open 8 a.m. to dusk year round. And so how is dusk gating managed?
Well, I'll take part of this, and maybe Dave will take part of this. We have a two gate system. There's a gate right here, Examiner Rice. So when the entire facility is closed, this gate would be closed. The distance from this gate to the edge of the road is a fire department distance, so that someone can pull in there and back up and turn around and drive south or north. But it's the distance that's required by Public Works. So when this is closed, the whole facility is closed.
Right.
When it's open, then, and this gate is closed right there, that means that the public can come in here, park here, and then go use the trails and the facilities. And when the whole project is open, then both gates will be open. And this is a one lane road, and the one lane road is designed to minimize our impact. It is designed as such that you'll be able to see and take a look ahead when another car is coming, and it's very short. It's just like a one lane forest service road. So we believe it's safe and has minimal impact. Dave, you want to talk about any operational issues?
Yeah, today we have four properties that are open for public access, and some of those have gates, some of them do not. I think our intent would be to keep the gate open, but if there are concerns or issues that are happening, then we would work to hire or employ a service to come and close the gate at dusk as needed.
Thank you. Just taking notes. Great. Okay. Thank you. That answers that question. I just wanted to have all of that clear for today's conversation. Last question for the applicant. Several of the conditions are phrased to address both applicant and any future owners. What's the foreseeable possibility of future sale of this parcel by Capital Land Trust?
It's not likely. We have an obligation when we buy properties. We're buying those in perpetuity, and the northern parcel here has a conservation easement on it that we're required to manage and monitor or in perpetuity. So no, we intend to own this and manage this property.
That's what I assumed, but again, just because that language was in the conditions, it was inviting you to speak to that language. Anything else that the applicant team wants to bring to my attention at this time?
No, but I have a question. Is there anything that we should have said but didn't say?
I have asked all the clarifying questions that I felt were needed for the purpose of our conversation and to make sure I'm understanding the materials presented. I don't have anything else. I'm throwing it out to you. If you have nothing else, what I propose we do now is I'm going to go back to Ms. Jaikowski to address the applicant's requested revisions to those conditions. Then we'll hear public comment. We'll have responses from staff, and at that last opportunity to respond to any public comment, the applicant could add anything else they think needs to be added to the record.
Thank you. Very well.
Great. Ms. Jaikowski, can we speak to the applicant's three requested revisions to conditions?
Yeah, the Department of Ecology soil testing is kind of a carryover from the SEPA determination, which was made right at the initial review point when noticing was given. So that can certainly be struck from the conditions of approval. Great. The public works condition, I'll let Arthur speak to that, the sewer and utilities. And I'm guessing that's canned, so it may be flexible. The condition regarding the mitigation, that is a typo. It should not include "and monitoring." I do want to clarify. So this is the way that kind of condition is set up is it's a hook, basically, so that the mitigation actually occurs prior to any kind of final building inspection. What typically happens is if the applicant can't complete the planting part of it, then they would provide a surety that ensures that it will be completed in the future. I can understand that that would be a substantial amount of money, and this is a little bit different than our normal building permit situations, so I'm open to alternatives if the applicant has some ideas on how we can ensure that that's taking place, what their timelines look like, things like that.
Understand that, again, like you said, it's not that it's a boilerplate condition, but it's a standard condition that applies differently when a building project is actually contemplated. This is sort of soft building compared. Right. To when this condition would normally be applied. If the parties are interested, because there's going to be a generous post-hearing phase, I'm willing to offer to have the applicant and staff discuss what the language and the condition should be and have you submit a final recommended condition after the close of the record, if you like, Ms. Jaikowski, or we can just talk about it now, as long as you say it's slow enough for me to get it typed correctly.
Either works for me. If the applicant has any suggestions now, that's fine, or we can figure it out via email.
For the applicants, do you want to take a stab at it now, or would you like to do this in a post-hearing written capacity?
I think it might be best that we'll talk about it. And I know we need 48 hours, you know, but I'm sure we can resolve this quickly.
With my post hearing, with the agreement to extend the post hearing, you can take as much time as you need basically to get this, to get a condition that works for county's concerns and also meets applicants' reality, practical needs.
Sure. Yeah, I'm sure we can get it resolved this week.
That's great. Let's do hear from Mr. Saint on that utilities condition. There aren't any utilities proposed. Any issues with striking the condition altogether, or how would you prefer that be handled?
I don't mind if the condition's struck. in essence, if utilities are ever put in, that condition is just part of the county code and would be in effect. It's more for informational purposes alone. I'm fine with it not being in the report.
Let me ask, based on what you've just said, let me ask this. If in the future CLT does need to or wants to expand facilities on the property to include plumbing, what would be the review process for that?
On-site utilities, we would just review them like any other building permit. Mm-hmm. Off-site, it would just be a standard utility permit for our standards. This is just kind of letting them know ahead of time what those are.
And understanding that there's actually no, it's not foreseeable the applicant would ever intend to extend any utilities to the site. I expect that to be true. Okay, and Mr. Saint says it's informational and he's willing to have that condition stricken. So I think that addresses the applicant's request. Shall we go to public comment now, or is there any other applicant testimony at this time? Public comment. Okay, Ms. Katie, can you help me identify if there are any members of the public who'd like to testify?
Yes, currently we do have one hand raised, and that's Nathan Paul. I'll go ahead and promote you to a panelist. You'll have to click the button asking to rejoin the meeting as a panelist. And we do have four other attendees. If you'd like to testify, you can go ahead and raise your hand.
Thank you. Again, I'm going to ask members of the public to state and spell their names and then give us a contact information, either a US mail address or an email address so that we can have your contact information for the record. And I will ask you to take an oath to tell the truth before you testify. Nathan Paul, you're our first member of the public in the meeting. Could we ask you to please state and spell your name, give us your contact information, and then let me swear you in?
Yes, my name is Nathan Paul, NathanPaull.
Great. And either US mail or email address, please?
MRTHUN63@hotmail.com.
Thank you very much. If I can swear you in, do you swear or affirm, sir, that your testimony will be true? If so, please say I do.
I do.
Please provide the testimony you would like to give today.
My only main question is when is the project slated to begin?
And begin, you mean when are the improvements slated and these organized trips with the kids intended to fill these proposed improvements? Is that what you mean?
Correct.
Okay. Anything else?
Is there a scheduled maintenance budget for maintaining the property?
Great questions. Anything else?
The location of the entrance to the project was determined by sight lines. In the future, I know on other roads like Cooper Point Road and Slater Caney Road, the speed limit has been lowered. And whether that's something that might end up being necessary with the amount of volume going in and out of the preserve.
Great.
I think that's it.
Thank you so much, sir.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
We will hear the rest of public comment, and then we'll get answers to those questions. There was another hand raised.
Yep. And next we have Tom. There's no last name. Again, you'll get a prompt on your screen. If you can please click rejoin the meeting as a panelist.
Hello. You need to unmute your microphone. There you go. Good morning.
Let's see. I'll just go ahead and proceed. Uh-oh. Am I still on?
You are. And if there's a video camera shaped button that you, there you go. Now we can see you.
Yes.
Tom, can we get you to please state?
Yes, my name is Tom Terry. That's TOMTERRY. I live on 5935 Swain Drive, Northeast, Olympia, Washington, 98516. And I'm a nearby property owner and a volunteer with the Capital Land Trust.
Excellent. May I swear you in, please? Do you swear or affirm that your testimony will be true? If so, please say, I do.
I do.
Thank you, Mr. Swain, please, or Mr. Terry, please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity to comment. I'm in favor of the project, and I think the plans are in compliance and meet all the standards for permit approvals, as is indicated by the associate planner. I think if we're going to have really a healthy environment, we must inspire our youth as well as their parents and the generations of children to come to conserve and protect critical habitats. I think they also must learn the impacts that we have on our environment and ways that we can minimize those impacts. And most importantly, they can also learn about natural resource management career opportunities. And there is no better place to do that is in the field rather than in a classroom. And I would expect for most of us that none of us of our true things about our character or the things that we have passionate about or even our career, we were inspired by being in a classroom. Most of that inspiration probably took place outside of the classroom with experience with parents or maybe teachers, field trips, or other things we did during the summer is really where we got the inspiration to do what we did. So I think based on my experience working with students at the Capital Land Trust Bayshore Preserve in Mason County, where the Capital Land Trust has collaborated with the Mason County schools to have a outdoor STEM curriculum. These field STEM classes are really, in many cases, the only time that some students have to really get out in the field and enjoy and see firsthand what the environment is like and get some exposure to really property management, land management, and to our natural resources. So I think, and also since the preserve is open to the public, that gives the chance for the students to bring their parents back. And it's an educational experience for everyone. So with that said, I just hope the Inspiring Kids Preserve will be soon and fully functional soon. And thanks for the opportunity to comment.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Terry. Ms. Katie, do we have anybody else?
No, there's no, sorry, excuse me. There's no other hands raised right now.
Okay. Last call for public comment. Anybody else in the meeting who would like to testify, please use the raise your hand feature to let us know. It's a button that's shaped like a hand. It says raise hand. Okay. Yep. Looks like we're not going to have any other public comments.
Nope, that no more hands are raised.
Okay, great. Well, I'd like to have responses to questions. It seems like these questions can only be answered by applicant, but let's go to staff first because the applicant gets the last say. Any further comments from staff on these on public comment or anything else before the record is closed?
I don't have any, but Arthur might.
Great. Mr. Saint.
Yes. I highly doubt the county would lower the speed limit out on Johnson Point Road for this. It doesn't anticipate that much traffic. It's always possible, though. The county has a process they go through every year adjusting speed limits, and this could be one of the ones they look at, but there's no plans of it currently that I'm aware of.
Arthur, is there a way for them to petition for the speed limit to be lowered if for some reason it becomes an issue?
There is. That's how the county, that's the process the county goes through. They submit through our traffic division request for changing speed limits. And there's a whole process that, where they analyze and track the traffic out there and look at accident history and that kind of thing. So.
Great. So again, that's the traffic division?
Yes, the traffic division of the Public Works Department.
Public Works, great. Thank you very much. And thanks, Ms. Tchaikovsky, for premeditating my question that I was gonna ask. All right, thank you very much, staff. Let's go to the applicants. The other two questions were, when would you expect to be functional with these new improvements, and is there a maintenance budget for maintaining?
Well, I'm going to address one of them pretty good, I hope, and maybe the other one Dave can help out. The project will be right now, the Capital Land Trust has kind of held back on a capital campaign to fund this. And if and when this project gets approved, they're going to go full force and try to get donations from the community to help fund the capital improvements that we're proposing here. And of course, when that happens, then we'll go forth with design drawings and, you know, construction. So make a long story short, I don't think there's a deadline right now, but as Mr. Terry said, as soon as possible is really the goal, because, you know, we need to get this up and running. As far as the schedule, maintenance, budget, I'll let Dave answer that, but I will say that I've visited a number of Capital Land Trust properties, and all of them are really, really well maintained, and they do a great job of picking up garbage. And Dave, you want to expand upon that?
Yeah, thanks, Bob. Once we secure the permit, we do feel like there would be the potential for us to start construction in summer of 2025, and then certainly going into the next year in 2026. We do have a lot of interest in this project, a lot of support from our current donor base, and a lot of interest in the community to see this vision be realized. It's a vision that's been more than 10 years in the making. And so we also, part of our being an accredited land trust, we are essentially have an organizational audit by the Land Trust Commission. And one of those things is around our sound finances. And so we have generated a healthy stewardship fund over the course of our history. And a part of our fundraising is raising the necessary funds for a public access maintenance fund. And we've had some generous donors already donate to that. And I have a lot of confidence in our ability to manage those funds to meet the necessary maintenance needs that this property will have as it opens up to the public. So very, very confident in that. And we do have a demonstrated history of being able to manage our lands.
Great. Anything else? No. All right. Thanks very much, folks. I think I have everything I need to decide the permits. I want to thank staff, applicant representatives, and the public who attended for their participation in this process. Again, at the time of scheduling, I had asked for an additional 10 business days to issue this decision. So by county code, it's required to be issued in 10 business days. I asked for 10 additional business days based on work that was also scheduled to occur this week and a large hearing scheduled to begin next week. The large hearing has been continued. And so I would say that it's highly likely that this decision won't need those 20 business days. But I'm going to formally use them as part of the schedule anyway, just in case something comes up. I don't want to be late. And since you agreed, I'm going to hold you to it. Thanks for that. So again, I'm going to hold the record open. I'm sorry, Mr. Droll?
No, I just said, sure, that's great.
I'm going to hold the record open for 2 business days for post-hearing written public comment from folks who had technology problems participating. That means it's open through March 13th for public comment. If we receive none, then the record would close to public comments on March 13th, and the decision document would be due April the 10th. If we did receive post-hearing public comment from folks who had technology problems by the 13th, staff and the applicant have until close of business on the 15th, Friday, to submit written responses to any additional public comment. So if that public comment comes in to Ms. Tchaikovsky or Ms. Katie, please forward it as fast as possible to the applicant team so they have as much time as possible to respond. I will be looking for written responses from both staff and applicant by the close of business on the 15th, or it can be forwarded to me on Monday, of course. We had also said we were going to have post-hearing discussions between staff and applicant regarding the one condition. We didn't talk about when you'd like to submit that information. What day do you think is reasonable? I'll go to Mr. Droll because you've been primary spokesperson for the applicant. How long do you expect to need to get this this proposed revised language for a condition in? And you're muted, Mr. Droll. Thank you, though.
I'm hopeful in this week. That's my deadline.
Okay, so March 15th also for that?
Yep.
Great, we'll do that. Proposed revised condition number 4, March 15th. And so if staff and the applicant are unable to reach agreement on what that should look like, then you can each submit your requested language, and I would choose what I think most appropriately meets code.
Okay.
But as it stands, I expect to get an email, one email saying this is what we agreed sounds like it will work. So the record is held open for proposed revised language for that condition through March the 15th. And aside from post-hearing comments and responses from the parties, that is the only document the record is held open for. All of those exhibits of evidence and your testimony will constitute the complete record. And again, I look forward to issuing you a timely decision either by April 10th or April 12th in the event of post-hearing public comment. And again, I expect to get it out before those dates. Thanks very much, everybody. Appreciate all your work on this matter.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Everybody have a good day. Thanks, Ms. Katie. You can stop the recording.